And we're back to day two of Tech Ed Barcelona. Welcome back to Channel 9 at MSDN.com for the live stream for what's going on. And today I am joined by Mr. Snover, Jeffrey Snover.
Howdy.
A technical fellow.
Distinguished engineer.
Sorry. Why do I say that?
I'm a technical fellow trapped in the body of a distinguished engineer.
I'm so sorry. Distinguished engineer.
Go ahead and point it out. Pick at that scab. That's fine.
Oh, my goodness. Way to start the day. Thank you very much. Thank you. I think my coffee has not kicked in yet. We're here talking about a whole bunch of things. You and I chatted a little bit beforehand for starting this interview off. And obviously people know you as one of the founders and the creators of PowerShell and what it can do and how it all works. And then the latest variants of what you can do with PowerShell that's been getting a lot of traction is desired state configuration.
It's crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
And why don't, for people that don't know what desired state configuration is, give us a little bit of a summary. What's the cocktail party napkin design of what DSC is and what it can do?
Sure. So I like to say, you remember the Star Trek series, right? Jean-Luc Picard would sit there and he'd say, here's the way the world ought to be. And he'd turn to number one and he'd say, make it so.
Right.
Well, that's sort of the model for desired state configuration. Desired state configuration. So with scripting, what you say is, I want to do this, and then I want to do this, and then I want to do this. Oh, there was an error. Let's see, if there was an error, then I guess we got to do this, and then we got to do that, and blah, right? So desired state configuration is more of a declarative approach. And you say, hey, here's the way I want the world to be. PowerShell, make it so. And then we go and we'll make it so, and we deal with all the error cases. Mm-hmm. If something has to happen before something else, we'll figure that out, we'll go make it so. If you have to reboot the system, we'll reboot the system, and we'll just keep trying. Now then, having said, here's the way I want the system to be, we get it in that state, and then we monitor it, and we see, is there any configuration drift? And if there's configuration drift, we'll either tell you, hey, things have drifted, you might want to do something about it, or you can tell us, hey, correct any drifts. So as we see things start to change, we'll go and then auto-correct it. And it turns out, we've been on an interesting point of this. So what we did was we tried to make the design such that it was super, super lightweight, mm-hmm. so I could do this, what we call a convergence cycle, test to make sure the world's still in its state and correct it if it's not, make that really happen very, very frequently. Well, it turns out that that's not in the real world how things are done. It turns out in the real world what happens is people use this technology and then they set the frequency to pretty long cycles. And I thought, well, why is that? And the answer is, well, yeah, it's a new way to manage your systems. You'd make all changes through desired state configuration. Mm-hmm. So if there's ever any drift, it says somebody didn't follow the practice. And so they want to, one, correct it and find out about it. And then they go to that person. They sort of whack them on the head. And they said, don't do that. Use this mechanism. And then they use that mechanism, and then everything's fine. So basically, it's more like a teaching tool to find out, to educate people about when to do it. But then once people do it, you don't need to do the convergence cycle very frequently at all. Anyway, so this transformation from this kind of imperative, I got to figure it out, to this declarative, here's the way I want the world to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't want to be Jean-Luc Picard, right? With that wonderful voice and the bald head, and just like everybody else does the work for you. Anyway, so I got to tell you, of all the things we've done in PowerShell, nothing has captured people's imagination like desired state configuration. It's crazy. And then we're also doing it in a very agile way. Mm-hmm. So we first released desired state configuration in 2012 R2.
Right.
And that was version one of it, right? It's a PowerShell feature. But then since then, in fact, yesterday we released our eighth version of the resource kit.
Okay.
So we brought back the resource kit. Remember we used to have the resource kit?
Yeah.
I brought the resource kit back so that we could deliver these desired state configuration resources. Because when we shipped, we had, very small number. We did a minimal viable product approach. And I think maybe we had a dozen or so resources. So as long as you only wanted to do a dozen things, it was great. Turns out we wanted to do more than a dozen. So we've been releasing these as resource kits. And the first one was the day after Christmas, mm-hmm. right? So we got a bunch of heathens working for us. That's a good thing.
Nice.
And anyway, so we now just released our eighth version. And this version, I think we had I don't know, it's over 20 some odd resources. So we're well over 100 resources in the resource kit. And this one are a bunch of the resources required to like do configuration of the CPS system we show in the background. So we've got resources for configuring System Center, for SQL, for clusterings, failover clusters, just.
How difficult is it to make one of these resources? Is it something that's only going to be available for engineers that are part of our organization to be able to do it, or something that anyone can go off and make on their own?
Yeah, anybody can go off and make them. So what you do is you model your resource. You say, hey, what's my resource? What are the properties? And then you implement three things, a get, mm-hmm. a set, and a test. Now, the only hard part about this is that the set has to be idempotent. So idempotent means I can call that thing over and over and over again, and it's not supposed to change things. Mm-hmm. It always stays the same. So let me draw, the best way to describe idempotence is like with math, right? If I have a function that says add one, well, if I call it 20 times, you know, I get to 20.
Right.
Right? Instead, if I say I've got a function that says set to one, I can call it as many times as I want, and the outcome's the same.
Okay.
So your set function basically is that way. Instead of saying add a user, you say this user should exist. So you test. Does that user exist? No? Add them. And if he does exist, don't add them. Mm-hmm. So that's the only tricky part. Now, in up till now, when to write these providers was a little tricky because we use standards-based management. Mm-hmm. So literally there are three parts to the model. There's the PowerShell script. The PowerShell script then generates the standard document, a MOF.
Right.
And that MOF gets handed to WMI. And then WMI then calls WMI providers or PowerShell scripts to make it so. So that MOF was a little bit complicated, right? So you had to write the schema, and mm-hmm. it was not that hard. It's sort of like JSON-like, but it was another step in the process. So in this release, in fact, you know, I mentioned we're doing the resource kit. Mm-hmm. We're also doing rapid releases of the Windows Management Framework. The Windows Management Framework always has the latest version of PowerShell.
Okay.
So we PowerShell version 5, we're adding classes.
Okay.
So PowerShell now has classes. And the reason why we added classes is because it dramatically simplifies writing a desired state configuration resource. So instead of having this MOF, you just say, I've got my class, and when you add a property, we do all that work behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And so then your class just has to have the properties, and then a get, set, and a test. Easy as pie.
Now, you mentioned that it's able to go off and to obviously set it. It's also able to go off and detect drift when something changes, and also be able to go off and fix it if it happens to drift too.
Yes.
Is it also able to go off and to do auditing as well? To basically say, hey, Rick went ahead and did something wrong. Go slap him in the head.
What a clever guy you are. Yes, in fact, there's this wonderful thing. It's called Get DSC Configuration Status. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it returns a status record for each one of the convergence cycles. So it tells you when we did a convergence cycle, why we did the convergence cycle, and then it tells you all the resources that were in their desired state mm-hmm. and all the resources that were not in their desired state. And right now it tells you the resource that wasn't in the desired state. In the future, it'll tell you which properties were not in the desired state.
Okay.
And then you can find out who was working on the system then and then go give them a whack. And the other thing we can do is we can do test desired state configuration. So you go there and you say, well, before I go trust everything in this desired state configuration stuff, here's the way I want the world to be. Before I go set it, please test the world against it. And so what you can do is you can have here's all my servers should be. Just go test all the servers to make sure they're in compliance with this. Don't do any updates.
And then let me know that there's servers number 12 and 17 are no longer in compliance because of some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
And go off and resolve them.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm telling you this. It's so exciting. You know, people are just so thrilled by this. And by the way, it's done as a distributed configuration platform.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as a platform, then you can build, you can do a do-it-yourself scripting solution, or there'll be a set of industry products built on top of it. And so things like Chef mm-hmm. is now layered. We're working very closely with the Chef community. They're great guys, and they're layering Chef on top of desired state configuration. So what that means is every time we add a desired state configuration resource, you're guaranteed that that's going to work with Chef. Okay, same thing with Aditi. They have a product called Brewmaster and Scriptrock.
Okay.
I forget what Scriptrock has a product called Guardrail. And at today's Desired State Configuration session, we've got both Script Rock and Aditi Brewmaster on stage showing that stuff.
Oh, wow.
And again, the point is that with those products, you can be sure that if there's any Desired State Configuration resource, it will work with those. So other configuration vendors, management vendors, aren't with the program. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is, hey, as new Windows stuff comes out, do they work with it? And the answer is maybe yes, maybe no. So the big message is, for people who are in part of the Windows management environment, you need to make your resources manageable through Desired State Configuration. And when you do that, our customers will be able to choose any configuration management product they want and be assured it can manage everything in the Windows ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And then for customers, if you're considering a configuration management product, you want to make darn sure that it's layered on top of Desired State Configuration resource, or you're out of alignment with the Windows Server strategy, and you're going to end up in the island of misfit toys, right? New stuff's going to come out, and you're going to be like, hey, how come this stuff doesn't work? So again, before you buy a product, you want to make sure it's aligned with the strategy. And it's a wonderful thing, because again, we're going to be investing heavily, and then you as a customer get to say, well, I want to buy this product or this product based upon the features that they do. Like, one's more graphical, or one has better editing, or one has better reasoning, instead of, well, that guy figured out how to manage Exchange. Oh, that's great, except I also have to have SQL. Oh, well, the other guy figured out how to manage SQL. Darn, do I have to buy two products? And the answer is no. Desired State Configuration means you work with it, everything works with you. That makes sense?
It makes total sense.
Total sense.
Before we continue on, though, I do want to remind people, if you are watching live, you are welcome to leave us a question for Mr. Snover. channel9@msdn.com. There is a entry there where you can go off and put in a question inside the form and go ahead and promote those off, and I'll be able to see them. Be fantastic. And now, you mentioned CPS in passing.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we're going to be using DSC as part of being able to manage and configure the CPS system. And CPS system, in case you don't know, stands for Cloud Platform System. That's the Azure in a box.
Azure Boom. In a box. Cloud in a box.
Cloud in a box that basically is able to come in and be dropped and integrated inside your environment.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Now we have one of those CPS systems here at TechEd Europe. I still have yet to go off and see it because I've been locked here at the stage all day yesterday. But today I hope to be able to go off and see it. How are we doing some DSC stuff in there?
Yeah, so currently when we did that configuration, Desired State Configuration was not ready for it.
Okay.
So what it is, it's wonderful. The whole thing is completely provisioned with a set of PowerShell scripts and PowerShell runbooks, you know, runbook automation, or automation runbooks. So the whole thing's running on PowerShell. That's great. And indeed, that was one of the motivations for, hey, you know what? We really need this Desired State Configuration, because it was very, very complex. And so we're in the process now. In fact, I mentioned to you this latest round of Desired State Configuration resources. Mm-hmm. They were written as we're now trying to figure out how to redo that installation and setup using Desired State Configuration. And it's coming along just beautifully. Because indeed, what happens is these distributed configurations can get really quite complex. You know, just think about it. I got this node here, and I want to have it join the domain. Well, I got to have the domain up and running before it can join the domain.
Right.
So I want to express its configuration, and then we have this cross-machine dependencies. Mm-hmm. So I'll say, configure this, but wait for this machine to be in this state. And then when it gets in this state, then it can go and say this was the SQL server. Then I can have something else, say a System Center product, that says, oh, well, in order for the System Center product to be there, I need the SQL server to be configured. So it'll say, I need to wait for the domain to be joined, and then I'm going to, domain to be built, then I'm going to join the domain, and then I need to wait for the SQL server to be built, and then I'm going to build that. And you don't do this in terms of like if, then, else. Mm-hmm. You just say, here's what I depend on, and it forms this big distributed graph that then PowerShell DSC goes off and makes so.
Mm-hmm. Now the CPS system has, you're saying earlier on, that the very, basically comes in racks.
Rack
forms.
Yep.
Pre-wired, all set to go with the provider sort of stuff. I'm assuming it takes a couple of days to get integrated into the system that you have.
Integrating with people's networks, verifying the cabling, that sort of stuff.
But it has, it's kind of neat. The very first rack is like the management environment, the management head.
Well, the first rack has the management head.
Okay.
So each rack is the same. And what it does is it's got a scale-out compute cluster. and it has at the top, and it has a scale out storage cluster at the bottom, and you know, top rack switches at the top. And then in the first rack, we use the scale out compute cluster to run the management head. So the management head's where we run the Azure pack, where we run all the system center, where we run SQL, and we put all those things together to then form the fabric. And the WAP then has, you know, provides tenant experiences. And this experience has just been wonderful. You know, it's one thing to write a piece of code and give you a CD and say, you know, best of luck.
Yeah.
And with CPS, that's not at all it. With CPS, we're taking all the components of Windows, of System Center, of the products. We are putting them all together. We're ensuring that they work. And guess what? The first time we did that, we found all sorts of problems, right? Turns out that when you type a general error occurred, it turns out that's not so helpful. You know? And when I'm a developer and I give you a general error protection occurred, you know, you call support and people complain. And you know, months later, it might come to me and I'll say, yeah, I'm sort of busy. So you know, maybe I'll fix that, maybe I won't. On the other hand, when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm trying to get the thing up and it comes up and it says a general error occurred, I say, who wrote that code? Oh, I wrote that code. Well, I shouldn't do that. And so, you know, you're going to hear a lot about CPS, a lot about the wonderful things, about the high-level features, the brochure-level stuff, and it is terribly, terribly exciting. But I got to tell you, for me personally, the thing that's most exciting is the stuff we're never going to talk about. The stuff that, hey, the error messages are better, the logs are better, things just work. Oh, we tweaked those timeouts. Oh, when a disk goes bad, instead of waiting 5 minutes to say, geez, I wonder if that thing's going to come back, we say, hey, we expect things are going to fail. Let's address those issues. So basically, and this is not just going to help CPS users. Of course we did in the context of CPS. But the way you want to think about it is CPS caused us to take all of our components and really get real with them and make it just wonderful, and that's going to benefit everyone. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to take the components and work them yourself, all the things we've done for CPS are going to help you immensely.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm just thrilled about CPS. Like one of the best things we've ever done.
That's great. One of the things that you're also very well known for in the last, I guess you would say the last year or so, is besides working with PowerShell and with DSC, you've also been very big on talking in around the circuit about the GIA concept.
Oh, yeah,
just enough administrative access or admin access.
Yep.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
Okay, so first let's talk about how we got here.
Right.
So we do Windows planning, and there's three streams of planning, Windows System Center planning. And it's a kind of rigorous process. We have three voices, right? So we got a team that's the voice of the customer. Mm-hmm. They go out and talk to customers, hey, what are you seeing? What are your problems? Okay, that's the set of things we ought to do. Then we got the voice of the business, right? The Harvard MBAs. They go out there and they say, oh, here's what's happening with the industry. Here's where the money is. Here's the strategy. Here's a set of things we ought to do. And then there's voice of the technology. Now, I own the voice of the technology planning. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I got a group of architects and really smart guys that go out there and we investigate, hey, what's going on here? What's going on there? What are our opportunities? What are our threats? And we deal with it from a technology standpoint. Well, a few years ago, I started looking at the industry as part of this technology planning. I saw, you know, I was disturbed by the number of security incidents, and the nature of the incidents was a little disturbing, so I started to drill into it. Now, let me just be clear. When it comes to security, I'm just a dope. You know, security is not my area. But as I looked at this, I was concerned. It really mattered to my business. And so the more I investigated, the more I said, one, it looks like the bad guys are getting better faster than we are.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we became aware of nation states participating in this area, which is to say, you know, nation states, intelligence agencies with infinite budgets are using those budgets to find and exploit vulnerabilities in our system. And as I went and I talked to some people, you know, the prevailing thought was, oh, well, look, if the NSA is after you or the KGB, there's nothing we can do. And I thought about that for a bit, and I said, no, that's not right. You know, it's they're finding true vulnerabilities in the system. Now, if they can find them, it's just a matter of timing before the really bad guys find them, and then the script kiddies after that find them. And so that thinking, those connecting those dots, I concluded that there was a tsunami of bad stuff about to hit our industry, right? It's coming, right? Again, the degree to which the nation states are doing this stuff, okay, fine, they're going to find the bad guys. But then when the criminals start doing that stuff, which we're starting to see, it's going to get really bad. But then when the script kiddies are doing the same things, all heck's going to break loose. So that really started what we call the Assurance Initiative. The Assurance Initiative is really sort of the next wave of the trustworthy computing.
Okay.
Right? So trustworthy computing was sort of a 10, 12-year cycle.
Yep.
This Assurance Initiative is really the next phase of that, right? We take it to another level. So the big message here is that we and you need to really dramatically up our game when it comes to security. Now, we're doing our part by significantly increase our investment in assurance capabilities. And part of that is the traditional investments, protect the platform. But we're actually also taking a much more mature approach to this. The more mature approach says, yeah, we're going to protect the platform, but we also assume breach. We assume that at some point the bad guys are in, they've got our systems. Now what do? And so you see a number of investments around that. How do I detect that? How do I mitigate that? How do I protect the data? How do I get the bad guy out of the system? Anyway, so Gia was one of those things that I picked up myself and said, you know, I'm going to drive this one. It's a very small part of it. We're not talking about the rest of that. I think we'll do that next year. But there's some very, very, very exciting investments in the assurance space, in the assurance initiative in the server space. You've already heard some of them in the client space, and those are crazy exciting. Mm-hmm. There's still more in the server space to come. Just Enough Admin basically says, wouldn't it be great if you could do admin functions, but you weren't an admin, right? So I call this the managing a post-Snowden world, right? The problem was that they made Snowden an admin,
and because he was an admin, he had everything, right?
In fact, one of the documents, how do you say this? One of the documents he released was a document called, I Hunt and Hack System Admins. That's right. The NSA, they're hacking you. Like, literally, I'm not making this up. They're hunting you. This was one of the documents they released. And then, well, why, right? Are you like, they think you're with Al-Qaeda? And the answer is no. They're hacking you because you, as an admin, have the keys to the kingdom, right? And so one security professional said, yeah. Look, the script kiddies go after the machines. The pros go after the people. Because the people have access to all the machines.
Right.
Okay, so what this says then is that admins are part of the attack surface. See, we've always grown up, you know, our big thick books on threat modeling are things about, parser attacks and firewalls and physical security. We don't really think so much about you being an attack surface. Now, look, you're a good guy, but if you click on the wrong piece of email, the bad guy has your credentials, and having your credentials, now he has access to all the machines you have access to. So we need to think about that and then modify our systems to incorporate that reality. So there's really two initiatives. One is Just-in-Time Admin. That's being done out of the identity team. Mm-hmm. And what that says is, hey, you're not a user, but then for a short period of time, I'm going to make you an admin, like for an hour, to do some task. But then when you're an admin, you can still do anything, right? But it's only for an hour, so that's good. Or only during your day shift. And then there's Just Enough Admin. Just Enough Admin is a PowerShell-based mechanism to limit what you can do when you're an admin. So I take actually, what I do is I take away your admin privs, I give you an endpoint that you can connect to, and it's well-defined, the set of things. Like, here's a software inventory endpoint, and you're just a regular user. You still have to be authorized. Don't let anybody in. But once you're in, you then run as local admin, so you can do administrative functions, but you can only do the administrative functions that I've assigned for you.
Okay. So this is different than some stuff that we do now, just as general practice in the industry, of having maybe two admin accounts. One is the actual admin account, and one is my day-to-day account that I use and have to authenticate in with the administrative account, people do something and come back out again. This is a different philosophy.
Exactly.
How this works.
Yeah. Now, some people say, oh, well, this is, in fact, I talked to a bunch of security researchers, and they said, well, this just looks like role-based authentication and, you know, at least admin privileges. Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, however. There's really two things, that's exactly correct. But if you go talk to people about this, I say, hey, how many people here have role-based authentication? Bunch of people raise their hands. How many people are using it? You know, bunch of the hands goes down.
Right.
You're like, okay, well, why?
It's there as an option, but they just generally find it too cumbersome or too much of an issue to use.
Exactly. I mean, I remember when I first saw RBAC, I said, this is the solution. And then 3 months later, it turned out I had more roles than I had users. It's like, okay, something went south here. And so so what happens is these things get, you know, just hideously complex. And so one of my phrases is, the security that isn't deployed isn't security. Okay. So what's crucial for security is that it's simple, simple, simple. And so that's there's two things that Jia brings to the table beyond what's been done before. So the first is just focus in on simplicity. Simple, simple, simple. So I mentioned to you this ability to craft these environments, right? Well, in order to make people really be comfortable with the system, I'm going to be introducing this concept of a break the glass endpoint. So break the glass, what's that? And the answer is, these guys are not going to accept something that if things go bad, they can't get their job done, mm-hmm. right? So think about it. In an emergency, fire, you break the glass, you get the fire extinguisher, you have the tool to address the emergency.
Right.
But you've left a pretty clear notion that you're dealing with an emergency. So we're going to have a break the glass endpoint. This break the glass endpoint basically says, hey, you can connect here, you can do anything. Just as you can do today, you can do anything. You're a regular user, you come in as admin, and you mm-hmm. can do everything. But I'm going to log everything that you do, and I'm going to mail it to your boss. So do whatever you want, but
right.
you want to do the right things. So that's one thing. So focus in on simplicity. And then the second thing is fine-grained control. And this is something that's a unique feature of PowerShell that no one's ever been able to do before. So in other words, imagine I say, well, I give you the ability to stop processes, right? That sounds pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
If you're managing SQL, you might need to stop the SQL process. But if ability to stop the process, you can stop LSASS, and that reboots the system.
That's pretty severe.
That's severe. And so with PowerShell, what I can do is I can grant you not only access to the commands, but I can say, you can have these parameters and not those parameters. And for these parameters, you can only specify these values or values that match this regular expression.
Okay.
So you can have very fine-grained control of things. And then you have to deploy it. So remember, it's got to be simple, simple, simple.
Yep.
Guess what? I use desired state configuration. Desired state configuration dramatically simplifies the definition of these configurations and the deployment.
Mm-hmm.
So in like a single page of script, you can define a management endpoint for file systems and deploy it against all your file servers. And by the way, back to that getting real and making sure you're building stuff that really use, I'm actually working with the MSI, the guys running Microsoft IT,
mm-hmm.
and I'm supporting these production servers as we roll this out to manage the file servers.
Okay.
And that's been just a fantastic education. You know, when I started this off, I had a very complex system, and I described it to security people, and they're like, oh, that's gorgeous, it's wonderful, that's exactly what we need. And I was like, I'm feeling pretty good. And I go to the guys running MSIT, and they're like, yeah, no, that's not going to work.
It's like, it's that whole cumbersome part again, right?
Exactly. And like, yeah, I can't get it except something where the solution is I get fired because I didn't get my job done.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that makes sense. So it's just gotten simpler and simpler.
Now, we actually have a couple of questions up there,
if you
have time to be able to go off and answer those. We've got about 5 minutes left or so. We've got Rob Davies asking, I'm getting asked how PowerShell DSC works with System Center Configuration Manager.
Excellent DSC. Question.
Which do I use and when?
Great. Okay, so desired state configuration is very much focused in on DevOps scenarios. So let's talk about DevOps, right? The DevOps guys, it's a kind of revolution in IT, and they've got this wonderful phrase. They say the problem is that scale times complexity exceeds our skills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you want to scale, and the cloud's all about scale, then things can't be complex. They've got to be simple, simple, simple. So you'll see desired state configuration is very much focused in on simple, simple things, and it's focused in on server scenarios, cloud scenarios. In the enterprise, I like to say, it's all about the edge cases. Oh, on Tuesdays, it has to be done this way. Oh, Carl demands it to be done that way. Mary wants it done this way. And so these enterprise products support those edge cases. They support doing business the way people want to do business.
Mm-hmm.
But by definition, that means lots of edge cases and lots of complexity. Desired state configuration is very, very simple, right? I like to say in the cloud, there isn't any politics. You know, I got a couple thousand servers. I'm not going to have, Rick likes to run his 20 servers this way, and Carl likes to run his those way. No.
Right.
I got 1,000.
Standardization.
Whether it's 10, 15, 100, it's all got to be the same. If it's not the same, because look, you run a production system. Run a production system, something goes wrong. What do you do? You do problem solving. What's mm-hmm. problem solving? You say, could be this, could be this, could be this. Now, when it's a simple system, you're sort of done. You check those three things, bunk.
Yes.
When it's a complex system, you say, could be these or 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 these. So that's why the focus in is on simplicity. So System Center Configuration Manager, largely focused in on enterprises and on clients. Desired State Configuration, very much focused in on a DevOps workflow and on servers and servers used in kind of cloud scenarios.
I was just getting the notice in my ear that we are out of time. And we have a couple questions left, but we're going to have to leave those ones there. Thank you very much for posting us questions, Nicholas and AL. Jeffrey, thank you. It's always a pleasure having the conversation with you. Join us up after the break. Coming up next, Mr. Simon May.